In the dark of night, one light still yet burns. Frightened fingers tremble as brittle pages turn. Fireside Mystery Theater presents The Midnight Reading, a summer series of dramatic recitations of dark masterpieces in miniature by the masters of the macabre. Good evening. I'm James Reeser. And now, A Tale of Terror by Winston Churchill. Winston Churchill? That Winston Churchill, you ask? Yes, that Winston Churchill. Yes, that same Winston Churchill who is best known as the Prime Minister who led Great Britain, its Commonwealth, and Empire to victory over Nazi Germany in World War II. The very same Winston Churchill who is widely regarded as being among the most influential people in British history, inspiring his nation's resistance against the threat of Adolf Hitler with his compelling speeches and impassioned radio broadcasts. He was an accomplished artist as well, who painted landscapes and other paintings, but what is not widely known about Churchill is that he was also a prolific writer. In 1899, the curious horror short story Man Overboard appeared in the Harmsworth magazine at a turning point in his career. He had been in the military since 1895, resigned in 1899, and had his first run for political office that same year. Despite its economy of language, this macabre little story presents amazingly complex questions concerning the character of nature, the problem of evil, and the nature of God. Here to read it for us is our own Ms. Ali Silva.
It was a little after 9:30 when the man fell overboard. The mail steamer was hurrying through the Red Sea in the hope of making up the time which the currents of the Indian Ocean had stolen. The night was clear, though the moon was hidden behind clouds. The warm air was laden with moisture. The still surface of the waters was only broken by the movement of the great ship, from whose quarter the long, slanting undulations struck out like the feathers from an arrow shaft, and in whose wake the froth and air bubbles churned up by the propeller trailed in a narrowing line to the darkness of the horizon. There was a concert on board. All the passengers were glad to break the monotony of the voyage and gathered around the piano in the companion house. The decks were deserted. The man had been listening to the music and joining in the songs, but the room was hot and he came out to smoke a cigarette and enjoy a breath of the wind which the speedy passage of the liner created. It was the only wind in the Red Sea that night. The accommodation ladder had not been unshipped since leaving Aden, and the man walked out onto the platform as onto a balcony. He leaned his back against the rail and blew a puff of smoke into the air reflectively. The piano struck up a lively tune, and a voice began to sing the first verse of the Rowdy Dowdy Boys. The measured pulsations of the screw were a subdued but additional accompaniment. The man knew the song. It had been the rage at all the music halls when he had started for India 7 years before. It reminded him of the brilliant and busy streets he had not seen for so long, but was soon to see again. He was just going to join in the chorus when the railing, which had been insecurely fastened, gave way suddenly with a snap, and he fell backwards into the warm water of the sea amid a great splash. For a moment he was physically too much astonished to think. Then he realized he must shout. He began to do this even before he rose to the surface. He achieved a hoarse, inarticulate, half-choked scream. A startled brain suggested the word, "Help!" And he bawled this out lustily and with frantic effort 6 or 7 times without stopping. Then he listened.
"Hi, hi, clear the way for the Rowdy Dowdy Boys."
The chorus floated back to him across the smooth water, for the ship had already completely passed by. And as he heard the music, a long stab of terror drove through his heart. The possibility that he would not be picked up dawned for the first time on his consciousness. The chorus started again.
Then I say, boys, who's for a jolly spree? Rum, tum, tiddly-um, who'll have a drink with me?
Help! 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 Shrieked the man, now in desperate fear.
Fond of a gloss now and then, fond of a row or noise. Hi, hi, clear the way for the
last words drawled out fainter and fainter. The vessel was steaming fast. The beginning of the second verse was confused and broken by the ever-growing distance. The dark outline of the great hull was getting blurred. The stern light dwindled. Then he set out to swim after it with furious energy, pausing every dozen strokes to shout long, wild shouts. The disturbed waters of the sea began to settle again to their rest, and widening undulations became ripples. The aerated confusion of the screw fizzed itself upwards and out. The noise of motion and the sounds of life and music died away. The liner was but a single fading light on the blackness of the waters and a dark shadow against the paler sky. At length, full realization came to the man and he stopped swimming. He was alone, abandoned. With the understanding, the brain reeled. He began again to swim, only now instead of shouting, he prayed. Mad, incoherent prayers, the words stumbling into one another. Suddenly, a distant light seemed to flicker and brighten. A surge of joy and hope rushed through his mind. They were going to stop, to turn the ship and come back. And with the hope came gratitude. His prayer was answered. Broken words of thanksgiving rose to his lips. He stopped and stared after the light, his soul in his eyes. As he watched it, it grew gradually but steadily smaller. Then the man knew that his fate was certain. Despair succeeded hope. Gratitude gave place to curses. Beating the water with his arms, he raved impotently. Foul oaths burst from him, as broken as his prayers, and as unheeded. The fit of passion passed, hurried by increasing fatigue. He became silent, silent as was the sea, for even the ripples were subsiding into the glassy smoothness of the surface. He swam on mechanically along the track of the ship, sobbing quietly to himself in the misery of fear. And the stern light became a tiny speck, yellower, but scarcely bigger than some of the stars, which here and there shone between the clouds. Nearly 20 minutes passed, and the man's fatigue began to change to exhaustion. The overpowering sense of the inevitable pressed upon him. With the weariness came a strange comfort. He need not swim all the long way to Suez. There was another course. He would die. He would resign his existence, since he was thus abandoned. He threw up his hands impulsively and sank. Down, down he went through the warm water. The physical death took hold of him and he began to drown. The pain of that savage grip recalled his anger. He fought with it furiously. Striking out with arms and legs, he sought to get back to the air. It was a hard struggle, but he escaped victorious and gasping to the surface. Despair awaited him. Feebly splashing with his hands, he moaned in bitter misery. I can't. I must. Oh, God, let me die. The moon, then in her third quarter, pushed out from behind the concealing clouds and shed a pale, soft glitter upon the sea. Upright in the water, 50 yards away, was a black triangular object. It was a fin. It approached him slowly. his last appeal had been heard.
That was Man Overboard by Winston Spencer Churchill, read by Ali Silva. As terrific as the story we just heard is, there's no denying that Churchill found a far greater destiny in politics. His leadership during the Second World War justly remains his finest hour. Speaking of World War II, we thought that the inclusion of some poetry by May Hill would be a most appropriate way to round out this episode. Who was May Hill? May Hill was simply a wife and mother in the small village of Chapel St. Leonard's in Lincolnshire, England, who kept a diary not long after the outbreak of the Second World War. She recorded and commented on happenings both local and across the world in her eloquent and comprehensive diaries and in her poetry, which reflected her thoughts and prayers. May's previously quiet English seaside village became an unwitting target for enemy aircraft. Lincolnshire was to be known as Bomber County. Her only son became a volunteer in the RAF, her husband a Coast Guard, and close family members were early casualties. A selection of poems and diary entries were compiled by her grandchildren within the book The Casualties Were Small. While many of her homefront writings held most significance for her family and her close-knit village community, major wartime events such as the capitulation of Italy and the coming of the Second Front, D-Day, are also featured. One of the major themes running through May's writing was her care and concern for her son, Ron, who had joined the RAF just before his 20th birthday in November 1940. The Click of the Garden Gate was the first poem in the compilation showing a mother's sentiments. Renee, in the poem, was May's elder daughter who lived elsewhere in the village.
I hear the click of the garden gate, but it is not he. He comes no more, either early or late, to his dinner or tea. He is far away in an Air Force camp, learning to fight. I wonder if his blankets are damp, and if he sleeps well at night. Not 20 years when went away, just a boy. He may never again come back to stay, to delight and annoy. Will what he has gained balance what he has lost? He will change. Will his growth to manhood improve him most, or make him change? I open the casement into his room, so tidy and neat, and the sun shines in and chases the gloom, and the wind blows sweet. Ready for him when, early or late, he comes back home to the sea, I hear the click of the garden gate, but it is not he. Perhaps it is Renee coming to tea.
In the following year, Ron was exposed to terrible danger even during his local training as an aircraft mechanic before being posted abroad. Two incidents of mishandling of bombs by ground crews might have easily resulted in explosions and his death. In fact, he was lucky to survive both incidents. The casualties were small. Was an expression of May's worst fears.
The Casualties Were Small by May Hill. When Winton Aerodrome was bombed, the casualties were small. Just your son and my son and little Widow Brown's son, the youngest of them all. And your son was your eldest lad, handsome and straight and tall, a model for your younger sons, beloved by you all. And Mrs. Brown's her youngest boy, her sole support and stay, so like his father, all her joy was quenched on that dark day. And mine, my only son in pride, so loved and dear to all. The blast of bombs spread far and wide, though the casualties were small.
Reading The Click of the Garden Gate and The Casualties Were Small by May Hill was our own Ali Silva. May died on the 18th of November, 1944, before the end of the war, and most sadly, before she could be reunited with her son Ron, who, serving with the RAF, had been posted abroad a couple of years earlier. The Midnight Reading is produced by Gustavo Rodriguez and Ali Silva for Fireside Mystery Productions, with additional production by Greg Russ and Daniel Graves. Our audio engineer is Bill Hefner, and our show was recorded at Silo Studios in Shirley, New York. Our show was written by Sylvan Sandovar, and our theme music is by Martina Da Silva. Stay tuned for the next installment of The Midnight Reading by subscribing to the Fireside Mystery Theater podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and our favorite hosting service, Audioboom. Rate and review us, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Our handle is @FiresideMystery. And for those of you in the New York City area, mark your calendars. Fireside Mystery Theater returns to the stage for a brand new season of thrilling and chilling original radio drama, Sunday, September 25th, 7 p.m. at the Slipper Room for a show we call Laugh, Clown, Laugh. Tickets on sale soon at slipperroom.com. This is James Reeser, encouraging you to go out there and discover the best of dark literature at your local bookstore. Thank you, kind listeners, for joining us. And be sure to mind the shadows.